coat bugs. The sailor's gray felt hat and black overcoat hung twisted in atrophy gangway. Morning sun outlined the sailor in the orange-yellow flame of junk. He had a paper napkin under his coffee cup. Mark of those who do a lot of sitting over coffee in the plazas, restaurants, terminals, and waiting rooms of the world. A junkie, even at the sailor's level, runs on junk time. And when he makes his importunate eruption into the time of others, like all petitioners, he must wait. How many coffees in an hour? A boy came in and sat at the counter in broken lines of long, sick junk weight. The sailor shivered. His face fuzzed out of focus in a shuddering brown mist. His hands moved on the table, reading the boy's braille. His eyes traced little dips and circles, following the whorls of brown hair on the boy's neck in a slow, searching movement. The boy stirred and scratched the back of his neck. "Something bit me, Joe. What kind of creep joint you run here?" "Coke bugs, kid," Joe said, holding eggs up to the light. "I was traveling with Irene Kelly, and her was a sporting woman. In Butte, state of Montana, her got the coke cars and run through the hotel screaming Chinese coppers chase her with meat cleavers. I knew this cop in Chai sniffed coke, used to come in form of crystals, blue crystals. So her go nuts and start screaming the federals is after him and run down this alley and stick his head in the garbage can. And I said, 'What you think you're doing?' And her say, 'Get away or I shoot you. I got myself hid good.' Well, when the roll is called up yonder, we'll be there, right?" Joe looked at the sailor and spread his hands in the junkie shrug. The sailor spoke in his feeling voice that reassembles in your head, spelling out the words with cold fingers. "Your connection is broken, kid." The boy shied, his street boy face torn with black scars of junk, retained a wild, broken innocence. Shy animals peering out through gray arabesques of terror. "I don't dig you, Jack." The sailor leapt into sharp, junky focus. He turned back his coat lapel, showing a brass hypo needle covered with mold and verdigris. "Retired for the good of the service. Sit down and have a blueberry crumb pie on the expense account. Your monkey loves it, makes his coat glossy." The boy felt a touch on his arm across 8 feet to morning lunchroom. He was suddenly siphoned into the booth, landing with an inaudible slip. He looked into the sailor's eyes. A green universe stirred by cold black currents. "You an agent, mister?" "I prefer the word vector." His sounding laughter vibrated through the boy's substance. "You hold him, man. I got the bread." "I don't want your money, honey. I want your time." "I don't dig." "You want fix, you want straight, you want a nun." The sailor cradled something pink and vibrated out of focus. "Yeah. We'll take the independent. Got their own special heat. Don't carry guns, only saps. I recall me and the fag fell once in Queens Plaza. Stay away from Queens Plaza, son. Evil spot, fuzz haunted. Too many levels, heat flares out from the broom closet, high on ammonia, like burning lions. Fall on poor old lush worker, scare her veins right down to the bone. Her skin pop a week, or do that 529 kick. Handed out free and gratis by New York City to jostling junkies. So fag, beagle, Irish, sailor, beware. Look down along that line before you travel there. The subway sweeps by with a black blast of iron. The exterminator does a good job. The sailor touched the door gently, following patterns of painted oak in a slow twist, leaving faint, iridescent whorls of slime. His arm went through to the elbow. He pulled back an inside bolt and stood aside for the boy to enter. Heavy, colorless smell of death filled the empty room. The trap hasn't been aired since the exterminator fumigated for coke bugs, said the sailor apologetically. The boy felt a silent black clunk fall through his flesh. The sailor put a hand to the boy's eyes and pulled out a pink scrotal egg with one closed, pulsing eye. Black fur boiled inside translucent flesh of the egg. The sailor caressed the egg with nakedly inhuman hands. Black, pink, thick, fibrous, long white tendrils sprouting from abbreviated fingertips. Death fear and death weakness hit the boy, shutting off his breath, stopping his blood. He leaned against a wall that seemed to give slightly. He clicked back into junk focus. The sailor was cooking a shot. When the roll is called up yonder, we'll be there, right? He said. Feeling along the boy's vein, erasing goose pimples with a gentle old woman finger. He slid the needle in. A red orchid bloomed at the bottom of the dropper. The sailor pressed the bulb, watching the solution rush into the boy vein, sucked by silent thirst of blood. Jesus, said the boy, I'd never been hit like that before. They call me the exterminator. At one brief point of intersection, I did exercise that function and witnessed the belly dance of roaches suffocating in yellow perithium powder. Hard to get now, lady. War on. Let you have a little. $2. Sluiced fat bedbugs from rose wallpaper in shabby theatrical hotels on North Clark. And poisoned the purposeful rat. Occasional eater of human babies. Wouldn't you? The algebra of need. Pratt's terminal came from the city pressure tanks, where open life jets spurt a million forms. Immediately eaten, the eaters canceled by black time fuzz. Few reach the plaza, a point where the tanks empty a tidal river, carrying forms of survival, armed with defenses of poison slime, black flesh-rotting fungus, and green odors that sear the lungs and grab the stomach in twisted knots. Because Fats' nerves were raw and peeled to feel the death spasms of a million cold kicks, Fats learned the algebra of need and survived. One Friday, Fats siphoned himself into the plaza. A translucent gray fetal monkey, suckers on his little soft purple-gray hands, and a lamprey disc mouth of cold gray gristle lined with hollow, black, erectile teeth, feeling for the scar patterns of junk. And a rich man passed and stared at the monster, and Fats rolled pissing and shitting in terror and ate his shit. And the man was moved by this tribute to his potent gaze and clicked a coin out of his Friday cane. Friday is Muslim Sunday, when the rich are supposed to distribute alms. So Fats learned to serve the black meat and grew a fat aquarium of body. And his blank periscope eyes swept the world's surface. In his wake of addicts, translucent gray monkeys flashed like fish spears to the junk mark and hung there sucking, and it all drained back into Fats. So his substance grew and grew, filling plazas, restaurants, and waiting rooms of the world with gray junk ooze. The vibrating, soundless hum of deep forest and organ accumulators. The sudden silence of cities, where the junky cops and even the commuter buzzes clogged lines of cholesterol for contact. Signal flares of orgasm burst over the world. A T-head leaps up screaming, "I got the fear!" and runs into Mexican night, bringing down back brains of the world. The executioner shits in terror at sight of the condemned man. The torturer screams in the ear of his implacable victim. Knife fighters embrace in adrenaline. Cancer's at the door with a singing telegram. Hauser and O'Brien, when they walked in on me that morning at 8 o'clock, I knew it was my last chance, my only chance. But they didn't know. How could they? Just a routine pickup. But not quite routine. Hauser had been eating breakfast when the lieutenant called. "I want you and your partner to pick up a man named Lee. William Lee, on your way downtown. He's in the Hotel Lamprey, 103rd, just off Broadway." "Yeah, I know where it is. I remember him, too." "Good. Room 606. Just pick him up. Don't take time to shake the place down." except bring in all books, letters, manuscripts, anything printed, typed, or written. Catch? Catch? But what's the angle? Books? Just do it. The lieutenant hung up. Hauser and O'Brien, they had been on the city narcotic squad for 20 years. Old-timers like me. I'd been on the junk for 16 years. They weren't bad as laws go. At least O'Brien wasn't. O'Brien was a con man and Hauser the tough guy. A vaudeville team. Hauser had a way of hitting you before he said anything, just to break the ice. Then O'Brien gives you an old gold, just like a cop to smoke old gold somehow, and starts putting down a cop con that was really bottled in bond. Not a bad guy, and I didn't want to do it, but it was my only chance. I was just tying up for my morning shot when they walked in with a passkey. It was a special kind you can use even when the door is locked from the inside with a key in the lock. On the table in front of me was a packet of junk, spike, syringe, alcohol, cotton, and a glass of water. "Well, well," says O'Brien. "Long time no see, eh?" "Put on your coat, Lee," says Hauser. He had his gun out. He always has it out when he makes the pinch for the psychological effect and to forestall a rush for toilet, sink, or window. "Can I take a bang first, boys?" I asked. "There's plenty here for evidence." I was wondering how I could get to my suitcase if they said no. The case wasn't locked, but Hauser had the gun in his hand. "He wants a shot," said Hauser. "Now you know we can't do that, Bill," said O'Brien in his sweet con voice, dragging out the name with an oily, insinuating familiarity, brutal and obscene. He meant, of course, "What can you do for us, Bill?" He looked at me and smiled. The smile stayed there too long, hideous and naked, the smile of an old painted pervert, gathering all the negative evil of O'Brien's ambiguous function. "Well, I might could set up Marty Steele for you," I said. I knew they wanted Marty bad. He'd been pushing for 5 years, and they couldn't hang one on him. Marty was an old-timer and very careful about who he served. He had to know a man and know him well before he would pick up his money. Now, no one can say they ever did time because of me. My rep is perfect. But still, Marty wouldn't serve me because he didn't know me long enough. That's how skeptical Marty was. "Marty," said O'Brien, "can you score from him?" "Sure I can." They were suspicious. A man can't be a cop all his life without developing a special set of intuitions. "Okay," said Hauser finally, "but you'd better deliver, Lee." "I'll deliver all right. Believe me, I appreciate this." I tied up for a shot, my hands trembling with eagerness, an archetype dope fiend. "Just an old junkie, boys, a harmless old shaking wreck of a junkie." That's the way I put it down. As I had hoped, Hauser looked away when I started probing for a vein. It's a wildly unpretty spectacle. O'Brien was sitting on the arm of a chair, smoking an old gold, looking out the window with a dreamy what I'll do when I get my pension look. I hit a vein right away. A column of blood shot up into the syringe, for an instant sharp and solid as a red cord. I pressed the plunger down with my thumb, feeding the junk power through my veins to feed a million junk-hungry cells, to bring strength and alertness to every nerve and muscle. They were not watching me. I filled the syringe with alcohol. Hauser was juggling his snub-nosed detective special, a Colt, and looking around the room. He could smell danger like an animal. With his left hand, he pushed the closet door open and glanced inside. My stomach contracted. I thought, if he looks in the suitcase now, I'm done. Hauser turned to me abruptly. "You through yet?" he snarled. "You better not try to shit us on Marty." The words came out so ugly, he surprised and shocked himself. I picked up the syringe full of alcohol, twisting the needle to make sure it was tight. "Just 2 seconds," I said. I squirted a thin jet of alcohol, whipping it across his eyes with a sideways shake of the syringe. He let out a bellow of pain. I could see him pawing at his eyes with his left hand, like he was tearing off an invisible bandage. As I dropped to the floor on one knee, reaching for my suitcase, I pushed the suitcase open and my left hand closed around the gun butt. I felt the concussion of Hauser's shot before I heard it. His slug slammed into the wall behind me. Shooting from the floor, I snapped 2 quick shots into Hauser's belly, where his vest had pulled up, showing an inch of white shirt. He grunted in a way I could feel and doubled forward. Stiff with panic, O'Brien's hand was tearing at the gun in his shoulder holster. I clamped my other hand around my gun wrist to steady it for the long pull and shot him in the middle of his red forehead, about 2 inches below the silver hairline. His hair had been gray the last time I saw him. That was about 15 years ago, my first arrest. His eyes went out. He fell off the chair onto his face. My hands were already reaching for what I needed, sweeping my notebooks into a briefcase with my works, junk, and a box of shells. I stuck the gun into my belt and stepped out into the corridor, putting on my coat. I could hear the desk clerk and the bellboy pounding up the stairs. I took the self-service elevator down, walked through the empty lobby into the street. I spent the night in the Everhard Baths. Homosexuality is the best all-around cover story an agent can use, where a snarling Italian attendant creates such an unnerving atmosphere, sweeping the dormitory with infrared see-in-the-dark field glasses. Walked out in the precise morning and bought a paper. Nothing. I called from a drugstore phone booth and asked for narcotics. "Lieutenant Gonzalez, who's calling?" "I want to speak to O'Brien." A moment of static, dangling wires, broken connections. "Nobody of that name in this department." "Who are you?" "Well, let me speak to Hauser." "Look, mister, no O'Brien, no Hauser in this bureau. Now, what do you want?" "Look, this is important. I've got info on a big shipment of H coming in. I want to talk to Hauser or O'Brien. I don't do business with anybody else. Hold on, I'll connect you with Alcibiades." I began to wonder if there was an Anglo-Saxon name left in the department. "I want to speak to Hauser or O'Brien." "How many times I have to tell you, no Hauser, no O'Brien in this department. Now, who is this calling?" I hung up and took a taxi out of the area. In the cab, I realized what had happened. I had been occluded from space-time, like an eel's ass occludes when he stops eating on the way to Sargasso. Locked out. Never again would I have a key, a point of intersection. The heat was off me from here on out. Relegated with Hauser and O'Brien to a landlocked junk past where heroin is always $28 an ounce and you can score for yen pox in the chink laundry of Sioux Falls. Atrophied preface. Wouldn't you? Why all this waste paper getting the people from one place to another? Perhaps to spare the reader stress of sudden space shifts and keep him gentle. And so, a ticket is bought, a taxi called, a plane boarded. There is only one thing a writer can write about. What is in front of his senses at the moment of writing? I am a recording instrument. I do not presume to impose story, plot, continuity. Insofar as I succeed in direct recording of certain areas of psychic process, I may have limited function. I am not an entertainer. Possession, they call it. Sometimes an entity jumps in the body, outlines waver in yellow-orange jelly, and hands move to disembowel the passing whore or strangle the neighbor child in hope of alleviating a chronic housing shortage. As if I was usually there, but subject to goof now and again. Wrong. I am never here. Never, that is, fully in possession, but somehow in a position to forestall ill-advised moves. Patrolling is, in fact, my principal occupation. No matter how tight security, I am always somewhere outside giving orders and inside this straitjacket of jelly that gives and stretches but always reforms ahead of every movement, thought, impulse, stamped with the seal of alien inspection. Writers talk about the sweet sick smell of death, whereas any junkie can tell you that death has no smell. At the same time, a smell that shuts off breath and stops blood. Colorless, no smell of death. No one can breathe and smell it through pink convolutions and black blood filters of flesh. The death smell is unmistakably a smell and complete absence of smell. Smell absence hits the nose first because all organic life has smell. Stopping a smell is felt like darkness to the eyes, silence to the ears, stress and weightlessness to the balance and location sense. You always smell it and give it out for others to smell during junk withdrawal. A kicking junkie can make a whole apartment unlivable with his death smell. But a good airing will stink the place up again so a body can breathe. You also smell it during one of those oil burner habits that suddenly starts jumping geometric, like a topping forest fire. Cure is always let go, jump. Naked Lunch is a blueprint, a how-to book. Black insect lusts open into vast other planet landscapes. Abstract concepts bare as algebra narrow down to a black turd or a pair of aging cojones. How to extend levels of experience by opening the door at the end of a long hall. Doors that only open in silence. Naked Lunch demands silence from the reader. Otherwise, he is taking his own pulse. Robert Christie knew the answering service. Kill the old cunts, keep pubic hairs in his locket. Wouldn't you? Robert Christie, mass strangler of women. Sounds like a daisy chain hanged in 1953. Jack the Ripper, literal swordsman of the 1890s and never caught with his pants down, wrote a letter to the press. Next time I'll send along an ear just for jolly. Wouldn't you? I, William Seward, captain of this lushed-up, hash-head subway, will quell the Loch Ness Monster with Rotenon and Cowboy the White Whale. I will reduce Satan to automatic obedience and sublimate subsidiary fiends. I will banish the kangaroo from your swimming pools. I will issue a bull on immaculate birth control. Young Dillinger walked straight out of the house and never looked back. Don't ever look back, kid. You turn into some old cow's salt lick. Police bullet in the alley. Broken wings of Icarus. Screams of a burning boy inhaled by the old junkie. Eyes empty as a vast plain. The word is divided into units, which be all in one piece and should be so taken. But the pieces can be had in any order, being tied up back and forth, in and out, fore and aft, like an interesting sex arrangement. This book spill off the page in all directions. Kaleidoscope of vistas, medley of tunes and street noises, farts and riot yips, and the slamming steel shutters of commerce, screams of pain and pathos, and screams plain pathic, copulating counts, and outraged squawk of the displaced bullhead. Prophetic mutterings of Brujo in nutmeg trances. Snapping necks and screaming mandrakes. Sigh of orgasm. Heroin silent as dawn in the thirsty cells. Radio Cairo screaming like a berserk tobacco auction. And flutes of Ramadan fanning the sick junkie like a gentle lush worker in the gray subway dawn, feeling with delicate fingers for the green folding crackle. This is revelation and prophecy of what I can pick up without FM on my 1920 crystal set with antennae of jism. Gentle reader, we see God through our assholes in the flashbulb of orgasm. Through these orifices, transmute your body. The way out is the way in. Now I, William Seward, will unlock my word hoard. My Viking heart fares over the great brown river, where motors putt, putt, putt in jungle twilight, and whole trees float with huge snakes in the branches, and sad-eyed lemurs watch the shore. Across the Missouri field, the boy finds a pink arrowhead. Out along distant train whistles, comes back to me. Hungry as a street boy, don't know to peddle the ass God gave him. Gentle reader, the word will leap on you with leopard man iron claws. It will cut off fingers and toes like an opportunist land crab. It will hang you and catch your jism like a scrutable dog. It will coil around your thighs like a bushmaster and inject a shot glass of rancid ectoplasm. I am not American Express. Quick! White flash, mangled insect screams. I woke up with a taste of metal in my mouth, back from the dead, trailing the colorless death smell, afterbirth of a withered gray monkey, phantom twinges of amputation. Taxi boy is waiting for a pickup, Eduardo said, and died of an overdose in Madrid. Powder trains burn back through pink convolutions of tumescent flesh, set off flashbulbs of orgasm, pinpoint photos of arrested motion, smooth brown side twisted to light a cigarette. He stood there in a 1920 straw hat somebody gave him, soft mendicant words falling like dead birds in the dark street. No, no more, no muss. A heaving sea of air hammers in the purple-brown dusk, tainted with rotten metal smell of sewer gas. Young worker faces vibrating out of focus in yellow halos of carbide lanterns. Broken pipes exposed. They are rebuilding the city. Lee nodded absently. Yes, always. Either way is a bad move to the East Wing. If I knew, I'd be glad to tell you. No good, no bueno. Hustling myself. No glut, plum flighting.